Welcome to the Team Building Show for Canadians, the podcast where we build the future, starting today. High-level conversations, real estate strategies, tips and experiences from the top team leaders on real estate in Canada. We don't dream about success. We build it together. Starting now, the Team Building Show for Canadians.
All right, everyone, welcome back. Very excited to be here with you today, Sandy.
Excited to be here too.
Yeah, it's going to be fun episode today, talking about just being positive, building a supportive culture. I think really a lot of where it starts is the language, and so we'll talk about that today, and we've got some really great points. But for you, like, for me, culture is the most important thing for me. I've been in situations where I've been in a bad cultural environment and I'm not thriving and I'm upset and I come home every single day. I'm not excited to be at work or be in the environment that I'm in. For you, when you started the business or when you started your team, why was culture something that was important to you?
Well, when I first got in the business, I was on a team, right? So the culture of our team was imperative for me being excited about the whole industry at that time, because I was interested in real estate and interested in being a realtor. I wasn't, like, in my mind 100% sold on this is my lifetime, like, career. Mm-hmm. So coming into that, you know, that culture could have made or broken me potentially, depending on what it was and what it stood for. So when I got into that culture, and we had a great culture of productivity for one, amongst other things, but definitely productivity was really high, which got me excited about being there every day, inspired me every day, walking in and being like, okay, we're here to, like, produce and get stuff done and have results and add value and all these things. It was, like, there's probably a lot more things there, but it was definitely very inspirational. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, similarly, when we started our own team, was to have that as a big piece of it, was to have production happening all the time. You know, if you walk into a... So actually, one of the biggest things I learned on that first team I was on was what production at a high level really looked like. In my mind, it was about half of what it really was. And what I learned from that experience for 2 years on that team was what hard work really looked like, and what, in the realtor world at least, what that looked like. And, you know, it's a lot more... And once you've experienced that, it's not crazy. It's not impossible. Or it's not like, a lot of people, if they haven't experienced it, might look at it and go, ah, that's so much to do in one day.
It's impossible, but it's really not.
No, it's just, it's actually a lot more exciting. Mm-hmm. Rather than sitting around and being slow moving through.
Waiting for things to show up.
Yeah, that's way more draining, actually. Way more draining. So that's one thing. I mean, production is a great piece of culture that is often overlooked. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the more important ones in real estate, especially.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to backtrack for a second, because I had a conversation with your wife, Kate, when we were at a Tony Robbins event. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about a similar topic. We were talking about building culture and what it looks like. And I find people often get confused. And this is what she was also saying, that there's a difference between the culture that you build and the perks that you have by being part of something or being part of an environment. Perks could be great things like, you know, award ceremony, swag, socials, education events, that sort of thing.
But
ping pong tables, big patio, whatever it is, right? Yeah. But the culture is how people show up and the environment that you create, how you guys support each other. And again, people sometimes get confused between the two.
Agreed.
So if we're thinking about building a culture of productivity, where's the first place that you would start?
Cultural productivity, I mean, I would start with myself, first of all. Most of anything to do with culture, if you're the leader of a team or you're in any sort of leadership role within the team, I would always start with yourself and look at internally. And then, because especially if you're building a team from the ground up here and you're just starting that journey, it has to align with what you want. And it doesn't necessarily mean you need to go selling hundreds of houses every year, but you need to think about internally what you want, what do you want that to look like, and are you being a role model for that, because everyone's going to look to you when they join up with your team, or you're a leader within the team. They're going to look to you for what that looks like. And so you have to be living it every single day. And it's really difficult to live something every day that you're not truly aligned with personally already.
Or that at least at the very minimal that you believe, like you believe truly.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't necessarily have to have lived this way every aspect of your life previous, mm-hmm. but you have to definitely have a desire to live that every day and be working towards being better at that over and over. And so like a productive environment, a productive culture would certainly in a real estate world look like doing some lead generation activities regularly every single day.
And leading by example first.
Leading by example. By if you're going to expect people to make calls for 3 hours a day, then you better, at least at the beginning, be there in the trenches making those calls as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge piece. I mean, one of the biggest things in culture, in any version of culture, whether it's like the production side or the the compassion side or the passion side or the energy, and anything to do with culture, if you're not willing to do it, then it's not going to stick. And you know, a lot of things you can do as a leader, putting out the garbage, for example, little things that if you think you're ever over and above it, like you're too good for it, you're going to have a hard time having people buy in. So if you're too good to lead generator, you're too good to go on appointments, or you're too good to whatever sort of thing that you might think you're wanting to leverage or to get out of doing, mm-hmm. if you're ever too good for that, then you're going to have a hard time keeping that culture up.
So it sounds like you got to be really humble.
That's probably a good word to summarize it.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of humility when you first start, and I think ongoing too. Mm-hmm. We talked about in a previous episode the ideal team player, humble, hungry, smart, mm-hmm. embodying that first and then looking for team players that are also going to be those people. I think personally, one of the things that attracted me to really working with you, working with the team, and also building and scaling all the things that we have is just starting with a winning mindset. Mm. So I look to the people around us and who is in like our 3-foot circle, and everyone has the mindset of we're winning. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not winning, you know that you're going to be winning. Mm-hmm. And I find that attracts a lot of people.
Definitely.
So what are some of the things that, for those listening, that can implement to adopt a winning mindset?
Well, love this topic because we all, the best thing about this topic is that we all individually have full control over it, which is something I think people forget sometimes. They forget, they want to blame something else, right, for the lack of confidence or belief or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the ability to adapt a winning mindset is all available to us to do. And so for me, like I said before, how it starts with yourself, it's the same with this. Starting with yourself in terms of you need to build up belief in yourself and confidence in yourself that you're a winner. And you don't necessarily have to be a winner historically in life to be able to do that, but you certainly have to start doing things that you respect daily that a winning person would do. So if a winning person in life makes her bed every morning, as silly as that sounds, and you are waking up in the morning and thinking you should make your bed, but then looking at it going, whatever, I'll do it. And you kind of negotiate with yourself out of it, and you go about your day, you just missed out on one little moment of building self-belief in yourself, because you just acted out of integrity with what you believe is a winning person, a winning mindset.
Yeah, you just contradicted.
Yeah. And you didn't just miss out on the growth there, you actually went down a little notch. Mm-hmm. So if you kind of think of a middle ground on all that, and every little thing that you do that is not your version of what a winning person would do, every time you do the opposite of that, you're actually going a notch down on that. Mm-hmm. Right? Every time you do it, those little things, the mostly not big things, mostly little tiny things, every time you do those, you're getting more belief in yourself. Mm-hmm. It shows up as silly as the making your bed thing is, or it could be like brushing your teeth before bed. Maybe some people skip that and they think that's, you know, they get lazy
that's
or something
okay.
at the end of the night. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every time you do little things, it elevates your own belief, and you show up to a work environment. If you have a team around you show up around them with more belief, more of that mindset of a winning mindset, and that rubs off really easily onto other people. Mm-hmm. But again, it starts within yourself. And so it could be little things that have nothing to do with the business, or it could be business related things like showing up and doing the work.
For sure. I think it starts with the habits, and then it's the actions. Like, how are you actually executing and following through? And even beyond that, like, how are you consistently educating yourself on, well, you were saying before, like, who do you look up to, or who are those people that you want to be like, and mm-hmm. and finding, whether it be podcasts, books, someone to look up to, mentor, coaches, and then embodying the habits that you want and pulling bits and pieces and modeling after people that are successful and are achieving the things that you want.
So, like, one thing that I have done for a long time that I know I see examples of it every day in my life is I do a lot of reading and educating, self-educating, self-growth. And most of the times that happens in the morning for me, like my purposeful version of it. I do it when I'm driving around through the day and stuff as well. But in the morning, I pretty much every single morning, there's very few days that I've missed this over the last bunch of years where I'm not doing at least like 15 to 30 minutes worth of listening or reading of some sort to enhance my own knowledge around around life in general. And sometimes it's business, sometimes it's other aspects of life. But the more you do that, and it's just one little thing to do every day, but doing that once for like 10 hours is not that, it's somewhat beneficial. But if you just did it once for 10 hours every month, it wouldn't be very beneficial. If you do it every single day for like 15 minutes or so and it adds up, I don't know, I don't have the math on me for that right now, but it's going to be 10 plus hours. Mm-hmm. And if you do that every day, you just build that habit, and that, you know, like, you believe yourself, you know, you're watching yourself every day growing and getting better. It's inevitable you're going to have more confidence and belief in yourself because you know what you've done. You know what you've done behind the scenes. Most people haven't seen you doing that, but you know. And so when you show up into the world where now everyone's got their eyes on you, it's inevitable you're going to have more belief in yourself. And you actually start to see it, because you start to see the people that you knew a year ago or 2 years ago, and you can kind of tell if they put in that work or not.
Yeah. Because what is their mindset compared to where you're at, and how do you align?
And if they haven't grown, and I've seen this many times with people, if you sense that they haven't been doing it, because you know what you've been doing, and you're like, if I put myself in a similar place as they were before, and I can hear it in what the words they're using and the things that they're doing, the actions that I'm seeing them do, I can tell that I've been doing a little more work in that side of life than they have. And as you see that play out, you gain a lot of confidence.
Well, I think the common theme here is self-mastery, and we talk about it in pretty much every episode so far. It starts with you. Mm-hmm. And there's a quote, I'm going to butcher it, but we heard it recently at an event that we were at. There's the person that practices a kick one time, but does the kick 1,000 times in that one session, or the person that practices one kick for 1,000 days straight. Mm-hmm. Well, who's going to be the one on the path to self-mastery? The one that's practicing it consistently and really putting in the effort over time, mm-hmm. not just once, but over time.
I like to think of it, because a lot of people hear it this from a financial angle of compounding, right? The law of compounding. Mm-hmm. So when you put a penny into a savings account and it compounds over time, it's going to be worth something one day. It's compounding. The interest is compounding, right? And it's the same thing with knowledge or skills that you're developing or mindset. It compounds every day, right? So every day you do it consistently, it's not 1 + 1. It's usually 1 + 2 + 4 plus, and it
doubles. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so exponential, and it's those consistent efforts at the end of the day that really add up and create massive change and a winning mindset or a winning culture. And people follow that too. So if you're the one doing that, you're the one showing up with that, you're going to inevitably attract people that are similar, and they're going to want to do the same. And then it again compounds, because now it grows into multiple people doing that.
100%. And I think a big piece of it starts with the language. First of all, how you talk to yourself, but then also how you talk to others. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that over the past couple of years, as you've grown as a leader, as you've learned, as you've educated yourself, what are some of the things that you've changed in your language? Could you give me some examples of that?
Yeah, I think language is super important. I really, really, really believe that. It's way often overlooked. Mm-hmm. The little words that you use, a little change in words to yourself or to others can make a big difference. Like we talk about in a lot of the courses we've taken around the word but, for example, right? And saying, if I said, to anyone, hey, you look great today, but something, it just...
negated.
It just negated that you look great today, right? If I said, you look great today, and then
there's a
they still
on
look
your
great,
shoe.
And now there's something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that little subtle change of words, and but's like a habitual word that a lot of us use. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a pretty common example. And I've, but I've eliminated it for the most part a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Even in my text messaging, I don't do it. I build a habit around not saying it now. So if I do type it, because there are moments where "but" still kind of makes sense as the word to use. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's so weird to say that, but I'll keep it in this case.
Sometimes it makes sense.
Yeah. So little words like that, as silly as that is, it's monumental in your conversations with people.
I think the word "try" too is a big one.
Try, sure, yeah.
I'm going to try to do that versus I intend to do that.
I intend or I'm going to, yeah. Just doing it.
Yeah.
There's a great example recently that we were talking about before this that we changed in terms of words. Mm-hmm. Is how we, and this is, you know, for anyone who's building out a team that has a big, I guess the administration side to it, mm-hmm. Is the words that we use to like names and titles mean a lot, I think. And I've really learned this over the last few years. I wish they didn't, because I personally don't feel like I care that much about the titles, but mm-hmm. but they do matter, because they show, especially to the outside, they show, you know, hierarchies, and they show who people should be talking to about different things, and they do mean a lot to people, I've realized too, in general. And yeah. So we changed our whole terminology around our operations team, for example, recently, where we're getting rid of the word operations team or administration team or any version of that. Mm-hmm. And we're now changed that to leadership team. So now every day, and we have Slack a lot, so even in our Slack channel, it used to be called the ops team. Now it's called the leadership team. And every time someone sees that, whether they're I'm gonna call them the operations just for the sake of this, but if they're on the operations team or the agents, when they see that word or they hear that word, operations team means something a lot different than leadership team. And so leadership team is a much more empowering word for the people in that group.
Yeah.
And also holds a higher level of hierarchy, I think, from an agent on our team's perspective.
Yeah.
Or even a client's perspective, right? If we were commenting on our leadership team, like I say this quite a bit, our leadership team is meeting for a business planning session next week or mm-hmm. you know, something like that. And that leadership team, I think externally people think of like CEOs and COOs and executive type roles.
Yeah, very true.
They don't think of my admin assistant type thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a much different wording, and really adds a lot more confidence and belief and winning mentality to that group, because now they have something to live up to that's a lot higher standard.
Yeah, and parallel to that too, one of the things that we had a breakthrough around, I think earlier this year, and you brought this to our attention and we kind of changed some of our own titles around it, is when you're hiring and you're bringing someone in, whether it be an operations person, transaction, whatever it is, giving them the director title too early, or giving them manager title too early, or anything of those sorts, when they're just starting to work within your organization, you're essentially capping their growth. So now you're giving them a director title, but then where do they go from there? What's the next opportunity? Mm-hmm. Rather than giving them opportunity to scale within your business.
Yeah, titles mean a lot. mm-hmm. You know, whether you want that to be a case or not, it's the reality.
It's a perspective thing, both for the person in the role and the people surrounding that role that are getting services or support from that role. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. It creates respect, first and foremost, the way that you're talking about it. Now, the agents on the team that are working with you guys look up to the leadership team. Mm-hmm. They don't look down yeah. at the operations team. There's a level of respect. There's obviously also... If you mentioned this before, but if the leadership team puts out, you know, a demand from the agents to do something or achieve something together, or setting a goal for them, then now it's respected because it's coming from the leadership team, mm-hmm. right?
And the culture of a team starts with your leadership team, your
like
operations
your core
team,
group.
Or your people that, for the most part, your salaried people,
yeah.
not your commission-based people.
Yeah.
The commission-based subcontractors, the agents on a team, typically, they can come and go. They, you know, they're not your...
Forever.
They're not necessarily, they could be forever, but they're just in a different role than your leadership team, who is there really the heartbeat of the organization. And if you don't have a great leadership team, you're never going to attract great agents to join it. And you can have great agents.
You might attract them, but you're never going to keep them.
True. Yeah. And you can have great agents on your team. So, yeah, it's hard to have great agents that come and stay without a great leadership team. It's the opposite of that is not necessarily true. You can have great leadership team without great agents. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I think I understand what you mean. Like, if you build a solid leadership team, your core group that's providing all the services, I mean, even if you have maybe not necessarily the greatest agents, you'll be able to scale a lot faster and grow bigger.
Yes, exactly. You don't even need, because you can create such a good service value proposition within that leadership team to clients as well, mm-hmm. That you don't necessarily need the highest performing agents to come and work that system.
You might not even need that many agents. You might just scale
that's
yourself,
true.
Right?
That's a great point, actually. You need a lot fewer agents. Mm-hmm. And why would you want it? A lot of people get hung up on the number of agents. I have two at times in the past. Why would you want 20 agents to sell, 100 houses when you could have like five?
Sell 100.
It's a heck of a lot easier with five. Mm-hmm. It's much more beneficial for those five.
Yeah, 100%. And the productivity per agent is higher. You're allowing your operation or your leadership team to really build out the services to create leverage. And mm-hmm. then your agents are just focused on production, which comes back to creating that culture of productivity.
So you mentioned a one word in there that's super important. I think it's maybe the most important to think of around culture, which is productivity per agent.
Productivity per agent.
If you're looking at any brokerages or teams these days, I believe that's the most important metric. And that's what we're really heavily focused on lately is productivity per agent. Mm-hmm. If you can get that up as high as possible, you're going to have a great, you most likely have a great culture, regardless of the little nuances of what it looks like for you specifically, you probably have a great culture because mm-hmm. production really is the one thing that you have to have the culture, the fun stuff that are little perks and things. Like you can't have no productivity and all the perks. You can have tons, if you have lots of productivity, you can have all the perks and fun and all the stuff you want. Mm-hmm. But you can't have the stuff
one without the other.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, 100%. And I think we get caught up in like the flashiness of this industry, but it really starts with the grit and like grinding and working hard to actually achieve something and then being able to reward ourselves after. And I think that comes back to having a winning mindset also means rewarding yourself along the journey. Not all the time, but making sure that you know when to reward yourself and taking care of the progress that's happening, right?
Definitely.
So I wanted to talk about a term that came up recently called ELF. Mm-hmm. What's ELF?
Easy, lucrative, and fun.
Okay. Easy, lucrative, and fun.
Well, like ELF, this is something I was I heard about from actually a podcast called I Love Marketing Podcast, Joe Polish, Dean Jackson. Joe Polish talks about this all the time, building an easy, lucrative, and fun business, and it does tie into your culture because an easy, lucrative, and fun business is a lot more exciting to be a part of than, he has another acronym for the opposite of that, I can't remember what it is, mm-hmm. but basically a really, something that's hard. Hard is how we think, like some people glorify hard, but reality is you don't want things to feel hard. You rather them to be easy. Doesn't mean it's like easy work all the time. It just means it's something like, if you put someone in the right role where they love doing it every day, it doesn't matter if it might seem hard to you, but they love it. It's going to feel easy for them because they're in their sweet spot.
Right.
And so if you think about building an easy, lucrative, and fun business, it makes me think about working a lot more smart. And also having a lot more fun along the way, regardless of if I'm doing a hard activity or an easy one. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like in your mind really hard, it feels like something out of your comfort zone or not easy. You got to find a way to make it fun regardless. Because mm-hmm. Just showing up to have a hard, some people glorify, like I said, hard, but you need to make it fun at the same time.
Well, I think that ties into like the art of fulfillment and like how you're rewarding yourself, kind of like we were just mentioning. When we close a transaction, there's like that very short burst of you know, gratitude and energy that comes from closing that transaction, and you're excited, cool, I closed a deal, and very quickly that's gone.
Yeah.
Right? So how do you keep yourself fulfilled? By having a fun environment, something mm-hmm. that you said is easy, lucrative, and fun. That is going to be the constant reward process to keep yourself fulfilled and in that role.
So like gamification we were talking about before is could be an easy way to do that, where mm-hmm. You know, it's like when someone wins the Super Bowl and they won the game, but the game restarts again in a couple months. So they're always gearing up for the next part of the game, and it's I think that's okay to a point that creates fun around it because you're working towards something. And I love the art of fulfillment versus the science of achievement, right? The science mm-hmm. of achievement is winning the game and all the metrics there, but the art of it is to celebrate it and have a lot of fun during the process so that the challenging times are not so challenging because you're having fun.
While you're doing it. And you know that there's good stuff coming up ahead.
Mm-hmm. The great culture, winning culture, really helps create a fun environment.
Yeah, I think some really great examples of gamification, we talked about this a lot recently, is like always having some sort of contest running, whether it's production, growth, et cetera, and then tying, you know, rewards to it, whether it be big or small rewards. The other thing too is, I lost my train of thought.
Well, I love that practical application of that is amazing. Contests, you should have a contest at the very least every quarter, if not every month. Mm-hmm. Like we do our, we just finished our fitness challenge for the month of August, where there's points that people earn around posting on social media around doing something active outdoors. Mm-hmm. And in Canada in August, great month to do some physical activity outdoors rather than, you know, even if you're a gym rat and in the gym every day, it's nice to maybe just go outside and do a little bit of that in the short time that we have here in the summer. And we give points towards people for doing that. It's got nothing to do with real estate, but it's helping build a
competitive
fun culture around health, fitness. You know, I think if we're more healthy and energetic, we're gonna show up better for our clients and everyone anyways. Mm-hmm. So it's got some good good byproducts there that help our business indirectly. And it also, so they earn points towards a contest that we do at the end of the month, and we give something away. And however many points you've earned, your odds of winning the contest go up.
That's amazing.
That's what we do. So we have a version of that. Now we have a version of that every month. Mm-hmm. And so there's always a contest running. It's not always the same. It's always different, actually. But it's creating some fun that's not directly tied to doing business. Mm-hmm. But it also indirectly can help the business. In that example, they're getting healthier. They're showing clients and stuff that they're doing stuff with the team. They're like building camaraderie around that.
Yeah.
Our belief is the clients will see that and go,
that's
cool. They're fun. They're healthy. They're energetic. I think that would show up as a good person to work with. And it also helps us attract realtors, I believe, too, the people that we want to do business with and be partners with.
Because
if someone likes that, then why wouldn't you want to be in the environment of that every day?
If you see fun, you get FOMO, and you're like, now creating that atmosphere of like, I want to be a part of that. So I think that's genius, first and foremost. There's other like super simple ways to create it, like having a bell every time an appointment is booked, or even just like having, if you're a hybrid team and you're working in other places, like celebrating the wins in a Slack channel or a WhatsApp group, and obviously celebrating there.
We still have it. We have a Slack channel on Emirates. You might have started this Slack channel for us back then. Appointment party.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Or do you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not called like appointment. I don't know what a different word is there.
But appointment group.
Appointment group. Yeah. It's appointment party. It's a party. It's mm-hmm. like, hey, got a new appointment, and it's claps and everyone's celebrating.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Super important to celebrate. Really important.
I think so. And with the gamification, like, yes, we talked about contests, but even having like your leaderboards talking about your pipeline consistently, making sure that the agents are all aware of like who's at the top, who's working, who's trying to climb their way to the top, I think is super important. There's teams that I've worked with, or teams that I've been around, or teams that I've talked to, and they keep their numbers hidden, whether it's the team leader versus the team members, and nobody wants to know what each other is doing. And I think that's the worst way to create a culture, because now There's no bar mm-hmm. to cross, right? They're not even setting the lowest bar possible. You don't know what anyone's doing. So where's the competitive culture? Where's that winning mindset? It's not mm-hmm. there.
I learn a lot. I take a lot of stuff from Keller Williams around this topic, because it's an open book company in KW, and you can go look up production of anyone around mm-hmm. the company. And I know that there's people that go and look at that and feel some healthy competition with others in different areas and that just based on seeing how much production they're doing. And yeah. same thing can happen internally. We actually share on our team meetings every single day we do this as accountability, but we also in our team meetings every week, we share everyone's numbers like in front of everyone. And so some people week to week don't feel the best about that. They know going into that meeting that they're gonna look a little bit bad compared to their peers. Mm-hmm. And then some people are gonna feel awesome and everything in between. But it's inspirational if you're in the right culture to see that the people on top are not like saying, aha, you know, you suck this week. They're saying, hey, maybe,
how can I help you?
Yeah.
It's more of a supportive environment. Mm-hmm. That leads me to my next point, and maybe we'll make this our final point, but I think the most important thing is to come from kindness in anything that you do. I mean, we hear the saying, you attract more bees with honey, and I truly believe that. So coming from a combative place or an aggressive place rather than from a place of empathy and kindness, which one's going to win? Empathy and kindness is going to win every single time. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about the values that we have here at KW and KW Legacies, MRN. And one of the biggest things is around communication, but seeking first to understand. What does that mean to you?
Curiosity over, what is curiosity over? Over what?
Curiosity rather than like acting on your first instinct.
Yeah. Like seeking first to understand means you're not laying blame to someone for something or you're not, you know, often you hear about, I always think that there's three sides to every story, right? There's always this person's perspective, this other person, and maybe they were opposite perspectives, but there's probably somewhere in the middle that is closer to the truth than either side. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of looking for that middle part, or where's the real truth in this? And so if someone tells me something that happened, I'm not, and it involves someone else, I'm not necessarily just taking that for what it is. I'll probably go seek first to the other person as well.
Ideally, ask questions, figure it out.
Ask questions, come from curiosity. What really happened here? Understand the whole scenario, and then make some sort of a move forward from there. Mm-hmm. Judgment is what I was thinking of. Curiosity over judgment.
Judgment, yeah.
If you're coming at anything from a judgmental point of view, it's a really dangerous place to be because it's not going to be received well from mm-hmm. that person's perspective. Whereas you might still end up with the same results of what the situation is. But at least if you come at it from a seeking first to understand, a curiosity point of view, then there's probably going to be much more likelihood that people will learn and grow from that rather than feeling bad about themselves or feeling judged and feeling weak and maybe going the opposite way.
Yeah, you're doing the discovery before taking action, which I think in situations where you're working in a team environment, that's super important. And I also think that when you come across difficult situations, you need to be able to understand both sides, especially if you're in the leadership role. That way you can take action, implement different things, and understand both parties, like you said, like the story. What's the real story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really important. Mm-hmm. That's just such an important thing for a leadership position.
Well, I think that's the basis of any kind of communication that we have. We have mm-hmm. to make sure that we're...
Most people get emotional, right? They let their emotions get the better of them and they act from that emotional state. And so I think it's important for a lot of people to just take a couple breaths, like really physically, when you're feeling highly stressed or emotional about something mm-hmm. and not act from that point. Like maybe you need to go take a breather, or go for a walk or something. Change your state physically is a great way to do it. Do something that makes you feel a little more positive and then come back and rethink what the scenario and go at it from that point of view rather than just urgently acting out of emotion, and that often leads to a judgmental point of view.
Yeah, and sometimes mistakes can get made from that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I hope you enjoyed this episode. Any final words before we wrap it up?
I love the ending topic there. I think seeking first to understand, curiosity. Curiosity is one of my main values in life. My personal values statements is curiosity, because I think it's a great foundational mindset to be in versus judgment. Mm-hmm. And so I love that as a finishing topic. And I guess that's pretty much it. I think people got a lot of value out of this. I believe that they did. And I really hope that they take some of this material and actually ingrain it into their lives and their business, and share it with someone else who they might know who could use some value like this in their world.
I think, as always, it's an audit of your own biases, your own opinions, as you're starting to build a team, and hopefully all of the things that we're talking about from the lessons that we've had, the mistakes and failures that we've also made, can help you as you are starting or on the journey of building your own organization. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Team Building Show for Canadians. Hope you enjoy it and find valuable information that helps you to start building your future today. We'll be back soon. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, comment, and give a like to the show. Remember, you can listen to it anytime on Spotify, Facebook, and YouTube.